The Public News Service Daily Newscast for October the 20th, 2021. I'm Mike Clifford. Backers say that a new law in Montana was designed to cut down on fraud, but could instead make it more difficult for some folks in the state to vote.
During the 2021 session, lawmakers passed a measure that prohibits the practice of collecting and delivering voters' sealed absentee ballots for monetary benefit. But Alex Raitt, legal director of the ACLU of Montana, says the law's ambiguous language could have a number of effects. For instance, on someone living in a retirement home who has a staff member deliver their ballot to the mail.
Vulnerable communities, such as seniors or people living in assisted living who need the assistance of others, are going to be particularly impacted by these types of voting restrictions.
A similar Montana law was struck down as unconstitutional in 2020. The new law is part of a wave of other Republican-sponsored bills in Montana and other states that aim to secure elections. This is Eric Tegedoff reporting.
The ACLU of Montana aims to have an injunction in place by next year to prevent the ballot collection ban from going into effect before the 2022 elections. Our colleagues at NPR report the House committee investigating the January 6 attack on the U.S. Capitol on Tuesday evening unanimously approved a criminal contempt report against Steve Bannon, an ally of former President Trump, for defying a subpoena from the panel. NPR notes the vote sends the measure to the full House. If the chamber approves it, the referral would then be sent on to federal law enforcement for potential charges and actions. And a proposed merger between two hospital systems in upstate New York has some residents and healthcare advocates concerned about the potential loss of certain types of medical care.
Albany's St. Peter's Health Partners and Ellis Medicine in Schenectady first announced their intent to merge a year ago. Ellis Medicine posted a $33 million loss last year. Because St. Peter's is owned by Catholic system Trinity Health and is governed by certain ethical and religious directives, the merger could affect care options for people facing terminal illnesses. That worries Kim Callanan of Compassion and Choices, a group that advocates for medical aid in dying.
The fundamental principle is that they should preserve life at all costs. For some people, this may not be an issue at all. It may be in line with their values and priorities. But we know a large portion of people do not want to suffer at the end of life and want to have the full breadth of options that are available.
Callanan says the merger could limit choices for families of people in the final stages of dementia or on ventilators. In a statement, the St. Peter's Health Partners system said it helps countless patients and families navigate end-of-life decisions, but did not specifically address medical aid in dying. I'm Emily Scott.
A new study links premature deaths in adulthood with people who experience abuse as children. South Dakota groups say it reinforces the need for prevention work.
Researchers in England say adults who were sexually abused by age 16 are more than twice as likely to die in middle age. In cases of physical abuse, the risk is 1.7 times higher. Tiffany Petro with South Dakota's Children's Home Child Advocacy Center says the findings align with past research. She adds the state is doing more to raise awareness about the long-term effects of adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs.
The adverse childhood experiences curriculum is designed so that it can be consumable by somebody with a lot of letters behind their name or no letters behind their name.
She says groups spreading the message are reaching many stakeholders, including schools and law enforcement. I'm Mike Moen.
And 20 state attorneys general, including Aaron Ford for Nevada, are slamming proposed new federal banking guidelines for not addressing what are known as rent-a-bank schemes.
State attorneys general are asking federal regulators for a crackdown on non-bank lenders that partner with real banks to make loans that are sold to the non-bank partner. By using the bank's name on paperwork, the non-bank can claim the loan should not be subject to state regulations, including interest rate caps. Rebecca Borne with the Center for Responsible Lending says the federal guidance should explicitly condemn rent-a-bank arrangements.
Because the guidance is essentially silent on it. It definitely raises the question of, is it going to be read as permission for more banks to engage in these rent-a-bank schemes?
I'm Suzanne Potter.
Finally, our Lily Bulkey tells us the first of five public hearings on the latest drafts of Michigan's new voting district maps takes place today in Detroit.
The final maps will be used for the next decade of elections. It's the first cycle with the state's new Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission, made up of an equal number of Democrats and Republicans, 4 and 4, plus 5 independents. Quentin Turner with Common Cause Michigan says having a citizen-led, on-the-ground process is a big change from previous years, when whichever party in control in Lansing was able to shape the new maps.
We have an independent commission led by everyday Michiganders who are taking in all this information, learning about the process, and then drawing lines not based off their political interests, but based off what Michigan voters and their input has informed them.
Other hearings planned for Thursday in Lansing and Friday in Grand Rapids. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, heard on radio stations big and small. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.